Hi, this is Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer Live.
Thanks for listening to this highlight from Dr. Bill Meyer Live.
If you'd like to hear the entire broadcast
or hear more highlights from our recent shows, just go to my show page at myfaithradio.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Just hold on to the promises.
It's 9 minutes after the hour. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. Bill Arnold in for Dr. Bill Meyer. Be here today and tomorrow, Lord willing. I've got Todd Mullican on the studio line. Todd is from Mullican Counseling in Edina. He's recently put together a new book on the dance of narcissism and codependency in couples and families, trying to understand our kids' emotions and ours as well. And Todd, welcome and good morning.
Good morning, Bill. How you doing?
I overslept this morning, yeah. And then I cut myself shaving, and you know the back is such a tricky area, Todd.
That's tough.
It is. I mean, you got to try to reach around, and you know, I nicked myself. So anyway, that's just the way things are. Todd, let's talk about your new project, your new book, "Narcissism: The Dance of Narcissism and Codependency in Couples and Families."
Yeah, for many years in my practice, I've just noticed this pattern with couples that is unfortunately a little more common than we would hope, and that is that one. You know, Jesus came full of truth and grace, as we read in John, and it seems like in relationships with couples that there is a tendency for one person to be a little bit more controlling. And when they're at his or her worst, could have a narcissistic trait or two, or be have a full-blown narcissistic personality disorder. And the other person tends to be more pleaser-based. You know, they're good with the grace part of Jesus, but they're not as good with telling the truth or saying what their real feelings are. And they're a little bit more vulnerable to becoming codependent. Now, it doesn't mean all couples navigate into that dance, but I see that a lot. So I just started to write down some observations, and I'm about halfway through it now, just about what happens in this dance and what we can do as believers to try to moderate that so we're not creating children from those families that either come out, you know, real truth tellers only and lack some grace, or come out with so much grace but an inability to really speak their own mind and speak their truths.
So what does a narcissist look like in the family, and then what kind of damage can they do because of what they bring because of their narcissism?
Yeah, they tend to lack empathy as their largest ticket item, so they have a need to be right, a need to win.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Dr. Bill Meyer Live. For more information about the podcast, you can visit our show page at myfaithradio.com.
Unfortunately, can create a place that isn't safe emotionally or spiritually for the spouse or the children to really kind of have their own view. So I think those are the largest pieces of damage they can do, is just the dominant nature that they create in the home, where this is the only way we go about things and nobody else has a voice, and you know, so they lead through control and in a way where they, you know, they don't really make requests, they make demands, and they expect automatic compliance to their wishes. Those are kind of a handful of the 9 symptoms of a narcissist.
Mm-hmm. Now, Todd, do opposites attract? Does a narcissist look for a codependent?
You know, people have always said that to me, and kind of the vice and the other way around, you know, and I'm not sure. I think the other way around is, I don't think codependents wake up in the morning and say, geez, I can't wait to meet a narcissist someday, you know. But I think what happens is they endure it. You know, once they're involved with somebody, they see the warning signs, but they don't, you know, they don't speak their voice. They usually didn't have a good attachment with one of their parents growing up, so they don't know what a healthy attachment looks like. Even if they love Jesus and have a great relationship with the Father and know what a loving attachment looks like there, sometimes they can endure something from a place of passivity and long suffering, or maybe misuse scriptures in a way that makes them endure something that's horrible. But to your question, I think narcissists will burn through people that are direct. You know, they won't deal with them, so they end up having acquiescent people around them, if that makes sense. So they're looking for people, if you will, in the marriage dance to say yes, dear, to just go along, because they have the right answer. So I'm not sure if they're looking for it, but they certainly don't stay with somebody that challenges their views, you know, in a dating situation or even early marriage. They'll promote separation or divorce or something. But so, that's my answer to that.
So narcissism, I know it's a word that is being used, seems like it's being used a lot lately, but who identifies themselves? Well, I might be a narcissist. Who says that?
Boy, yeah. I mean, I can't remember the last time somebody came into my office and said, you know, I think I'm a narcissist. You know, it's not going to happen because the problem is that people that are like that don't think they are because they sadly live in a blame narrative, if that makes sense. Everything is everybody else's fault. So because they lack empathy, they say, golly, you know, I wonder how God would have me see that person, or, you know, how can I put myself in their shoes? You know, because they usually grew up with one of two extremes, unfortunately. One extreme is they were very bullied by a dominant parent, so now they're going to bully people. Or they grew up with getting everything they wanted all the time, entitled, so now they are continuing to get what they want when they want it. Mm-hmm. So usually, because of that framework, Bill, it's so ingrained in their DNA that it's tough for them to even be aware that they're dominating the situation, and they have no acknowledgement of that at all.
So, Todd, if a narcissist doesn't have empathy and the kids are not getting empathy from the narcissist parent, it seems to me that the kids are going to have a fair amount of rebellion coming up, or they're going to act out in ways that it's going to cause problems. I want you to think about that and answer that after the break. We're going to take just a little break. It's 15 minutes after the hour. We're talking to Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina, and we'll be back in just a minute. Good morning, everyone. It's 17 minutes after the hour. Glad you joined us today. We're talking to Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina. We're talking about narcissism and the dance that goes on and in codependent families. And when kids, Todd, if you remember my question, kids aren't getting empathy from a narcissistic parent. And maybe the parent's not going to even ever admit they're a narcissist. So that's a problem. And then they're not giving empathy to the kids. So the kids are going to rebel and they're going to act out. That's got to be something that's going to cost them at some point, right?
Yeah, I usually see one of the other extremes, and you named one of them, and that is a rebellious kid. Another book I wrote talks about five ways to bring out the best in your kids, and there's five C's that I talk about. And the first C is to be a congruent parent where, you know, your kid is not going to respect you if you're not living out the life that you're asking them to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're screaming at them and then asking them not to scream at your sibling, we have a problem. If you're demanding that they make their bed and your bed isn't made and et cetera, it's going to create, and if you're very coercive in your style where you're so demanding and not a good leader, you're going to create kids that are either rebellious, or I've seen the other end, Bill, where they're overly compliant out of fear. So some kids will become overly compliant, not know their own voice, not know their own feelings. So their compliance is not done from a place of, you know, really respecting their parents and doing it as Ephesians talks about, but it's more done from a place of extreme fear and overcompliance. So, yeah, unfortunately, it creates children that go one extreme to the other if they're not careful. Now, sometimes that codependent parent on the other side can try to soothe those waters a bit, but it's very difficult, and the kids end up being very upset with the codependent parent for not stepping up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the codependent parent might say, well, I'm supposed to have a united front with my spouse, whereas, boy, you know, I don't know if you want to have a united front with a narcissist. You know, you've got to challenge that framework. You've got to speak your mind. You've got to, you know, Romans 12:9 says love must be sincere. So that codependent spouse needs to be able to have their voice, so that the kids are not just hearing, you know, the voice of the narcissist only, because it will create, like you said, it'll create rebellion, or I've seen create the other end, which is overcompliance.
Mm-hmm. So what are some conflict management strategies for people in these kinds of relationships?
Well, you know, the best they can do, I think, you know, if we're dealing with a narcissist, I would insert that they want to create the boundaries first. You know, the boundaries in conflict is, you know, I'm going to have an honest conversation with my spouse as a narcissist and say, you know, this pattern is very hurtful to our family, and I'm very hurt. I'm very discouraged. I've been in prayer about it. I've talked to, you know, my pastor about it, or maybe they haven't, but they're very worried. And so they're going to make an honest assertion to their spouse about how troubled they are by it. Now, the narcissist will overreact. They'll be very defensive. They'll be very blaming. So a lot of times that boundary of honest conversations don't work. But the best we can do until we get counseling help or have some kind of resolution process is do these four strategies. And one is we can try to speak without offending. So we can model that for our children. So I'm going to say, you know, here's my thoughts about something. How do you see it? And then I'm going to try to listen without defending, which is when my spouse is addressing something with me that they're concerned about, how am I responding in a way that's non-defensive, but just trying to listen to their opinion and try to then share what I think in a non-defensive manner.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, I try to get couples to know that once in a while you are going to have to agree to disagree. That's the third one. Now, that's tough for couples, especially for a narcissist, because they always have to be right. But if they have a mild narcissistic trait or are just a bit controlling and not a full-blown narcissist, they'll do that better. And sometimes, you know, my wife and I have been married, you know, 28 years, and we have three adult daughters. But, you know, we didn't always agree on parenting. You know, we still don't always agree, but we're for each other. We love each other. God is for us. So sometimes couples have to realize in conflicts that, hey, I want it 68 degrees. She wants it 72 degrees. So let's put it at 70 and everybody be quiet.
Mm-hmm. You know? Even though the correct answer is 68.
Exactly right. Thank you. And then the fourth one is own your own part. And this is where couples can really help their marriage grow a lot, Bill, if they can come back after the conflict. Because fight or flight enters into those conflicts. And usually we have overreaction or we have silence. The fighter usually doesn't fight fair. The flighter usually shuts down. So we have to be able to come back and have mercy and bring forgiveness and own our own part. And it doesn't make it perfect, but it makes us be people of resolution, of restoration, so that couples aren't defined by their conflicts, but they can learn from their conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Because unfortunately, a lot of marriages, people get defined by their conflicts. You know, they're defined by, you know, that one thing that they really struggle with. Versus, you know, we're still in process on that one area that we don't agree on, but we're trying to figure it out. But here's the 10 areas that we are really doing well in, and God does want us to look at those areas too and celebrate those victories. So owning our own part just creates a spirit in the home of forgiveness, and it really helps the children then when they become big people to model that in their relationships and their families. Hey, we're going to own our own side of the street. We're not going to promote blame. We're going to promote accountability and be people, be Christ followers that look in the mirror and say, you know, this one's on me. You know, mm-hmm. these words were hurtful, and I've got to own that.
Yeah, Todd, we just have about a minute left. But if I'm a narcissist and I'm making demands and not showing empathy, how do I get my kids to believe that I love them when maybe what they need from me is something they're not getting from me?
Yeah, the first step for the narcissist is to try to get to step one is that, you know, and unfortunately the only way that ever happens, Bill, is if for the codependent to step up and say, I am unhappy, I believe you have these traits that are hurtful. But if there is somebody listening that has what they feel is maybe a controlling trait or maybe some mild narcissism, the best thing they can do in their parenting is to start asking their kids, you know, how do you see it? Or, you know, yesterday when I just was so demanding, I'm so sorry. I'm trying to lead our family well, but how do you see this? And I'm so sorry. You know, so when a person that maybe has a mild controlling trait can be more empathetic and create a safe place, then it changes families, Bill. So mm-hmm. when the controlling person can have more empathy and just slow down a little bit and say to their spouse, yeah, but how do you see it, honey? Or say to their 16-year-old, you know, here's our rules, but what do you think of that? Now, the parents are still the authority, but good leaders draw out other people. They don't mm-hmm. make, you know, they don't demand things. They draw people out.
Mm-hmm. That's all good information. Todd, thank you so much for being on the show this morning. I've been speaking with Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina, and it is 25 minutes after the hour. We'll take a little break and be right back.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, you can visit our program page at myfaithradio.com.